The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 2, text number 41, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarsan Das Adhikari, recorded on November 19th, 2006, in Austin, Texas, USA.
So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta, Tridandi Goswami Maharaj, Prabhupada. Chapter number 2, Contents of the Gita, summarized. Text number 41. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Visayatmika Budhir Ekeha Kuru Nandana. Bhushaka Yanantascha Buddhayo Vivyasayanam. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. And those who are on this path are resolute in purpose, and their aim is one. O beloved child of the Kurus, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. Purport. A strong faith that by Krishna consciousness one will be elevated to the highest perfection of life is called Vivisayatmika, intelligence. The Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya 2262, states, Shraddha Shabde Vishvasa Kahe Sudridha Nishchaya Krishna Bhakti Kaila Sarve Karma Kritahaya. Faith means unflinching trust in something sublime. When one is engaged in the duties of Krishna consciousness, he need not act in relationship to the material world with obligations to family traditions, humanity, or nationality. Fruitive activities are the engagements of one's reactions from past good or bad deeds. When one is awake in Krishna consciousness, he need no longer endeavor for good results in his activities. When one is situated in Krishna consciousness, all activities are on the absolute plane, for they are no longer subject to dualities like good and bad. The highest perfection of Krishna consciousness is renunciation of the material conception of life. This state is automatically achieved by progressive Krishna consciousness. The resolute purpose of a person in Krishna consciousness is based on knowledge. Vasudeva Sarvamiti Sa Mahatma Sudurlabha. A person in Krishna consciousness is the rare good soul who knows perfectly that Vasudeva or Krishna is the root of all manifested causes. As by watering the root of a tree, one automatically distributes water to the leaves and branches, so by acting in Krishna consciousness, one can render the highest service to everyone, namely self, family, society, country, humanity, etc. If Krishna is satisfied by one's actions, then everyone will be satisfied. Service in Krishna consciousness is, however, best practiced under the able guidance of a spiritual master who is a bona fide representative of Krishna, who knows the nature of the student and who can guide him to act in Krishna consciousness. As such, to be well versed in Krishna consciousness, one has to act firmly and obey the representative of Krishna. And one should accept the instruction of the bona fide spiritual master as one's mission in life. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur instructs us in his famous prayers for the spiritual master as follows. Yasya prasadad bhagavat prasado Yasya prasadam nagati kutopi Jayanstuvangstashri yashastri sanjang vande guru shi charanaravindam. By satisfaction of the spiritual master, the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes satisfied. And by not satisfying the spiritual master, there is no chance of being promoted to the plane of Krishna consciousness. I should therefore meditate and pray for his mercy 3 times a day and offer my respectful obeisances unto him, my spiritual master. The whole process, however, depends on perfect knowledge of the soul beyond the conception of the body, not theoretically but practically. And there is no longer a chance for sense gratification manifested in fruitive activities. One who is not firmly fixed in mind is diverted by various types of fruitive acts. Om Jnanatimadandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Shakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam. So, there are 2 types of positions to be in. It's very simple. You can be on the path or you can be off the path. It's very simple. You can be on the path or you can be off the path. Just imagine you're driving on I-35 to Dallas. You see. You pay attention to the driving, you stay on the path. If you fall asleep at the wheel, then you will go off the path. You see. You'll wake up and find yourself, you know, somewhere not on the path. So, if you want to get to Dallas, you have to stay on the path. If you go off the path, you may total your car, you may die in an accident. If you go off the path. So, just as driving to Dallas, one has to be very careful to remain on the path, I-35. Similarly, on the pathway back to home, back to Godhead, you have to be very, very careful to remain on the path. First, you have to get on the path. You have to find out where it is, how to get to the path, and once you're on the path, you have to stay on the path. Krishna here describes the symptoms of those who are on the path and those who are not on the path. Those who are on the path are vyavyasayatmaka buddhi. They are fixed in their intelligence. They are not wavering, well, this and that. Wondering, should I do this, should I do that? You see. That is called the mental platform. Accept, reject, accept, reject, accept, reject. Should I do this, should I do that, should I do this, should I do that? Those who are on the pathway, they are very fixed. They know what they're doing, and they stay fixed in it. They don't deviate. They know exactly what they're doing. They have their mission. They have their orders from their spiritual master, and they are simply meditating on his orders and how to execute his orders. That's all. Nothing else in the mind. They don't allow themselves to be disturbed by anything else. They have Guru's order, and they execute it. And that way they stay fixed on that path without any deviation. It's not that when they come to Georgetown they think, well, maybe I should get off here. Or they go, you know, they come to Waco, they think, yes, now I will go. No. They stay on the pathway all the way through the destination. Someone who is not fixed on going to Dallas, I think, well, maybe, you know, Waco looks pretty good. There's a Texas Ranger Museum, you know. I'll get off here, get off there. No. Those who are fixed on the pathway, they know exactly what they want and they stay fixed. Then Krishna says, it's very nice how he addresses Arjuna here. Kuru Nandana, my dear beloved child of the Kurus. See, but affection. How affectionately he's addressing Arjuna here. Beloved child of the Kurus. You see, this is a very deep relationship between Arjuna and Krishna. So in a very affectionate way, he addresses this Kuru Nandana. My dear Kuru Nandana. The intelligence of those who are irresolute is many bands. It's splayed out all over the place. You see? We see that as a symptom of material consciousness. People don't know what they're doing. And their consciousness just happens to be whatever advertisement they just saw on television or whatever, you know. It's just, they're not fixed. They're just manipulated by the media, basically. They're simply media puppets. Whatever the latest thing is, you know, the latest fad, they do that. Another fad comes in, they do that. Another fad, they do that. This is material consciousness. They have no fixity. So, one may say, well, why should I be on this path? You're talking about being fixed on this path, but who wants to be on it anyway? Why would I even want to be on this path? That question could be asked. What is the result of getting on this path, and what's the result of not getting on this path? One can study the difference. That's a very important comparison to make. Because this pathway is not for blind followers. This pathway is for thoughtful men. Those who are going deep within their heart, wanting to know what is the innermost truth of existence. That's this pathway. What is the actual purpose, the meaning of existence? Why do I exist? Where have I come from? What is my purpose? What is my goal? How can I achieve it as quickly as possible? You see? This is the mentality of those who are on this pathway. They are not blindly following. They are following with fixed intelligence. Vyavisayatmaka buddhi. They have very strong faith. Because after careful analysis, they have understood there is nothing more sublime than this. This is the cream of the crop when it comes to sublimity. This is the ultimate sublimity. So, with the conviction of a connoisseur, they go for that which is the cream of existence without any wavering of the mind. Srila Prabhupada here emphasizes the importance of guru, spiritual master. It's a fact. Guru is very, very essential. As he states, it's best practiced under the able guidance of a spiritual master who is a bona fide representative of Krishna. This is the qualification, actually, for being a spiritual master. One who is not a representative of Krishna is not qualified to be guru. And what is the qualification for being a representative? One has to be a devotee. Guru has to be a devotee of Krishna. If someone claims to represent Krishna, if someone claims to represent Krishna, but he's not a devotee, then he doesn't represent Krishna. In fact, he doesn't even understand Krishna. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita what is the qualification for understanding him. That qualification, he says, because you are my devotee and my friend, therefore you can understand. Therefore, I'm revealing this to you. So without being devotee, it is not revealed. This is not mere intellectualism, that you learn how to manipulate some high-sounding words about transcendence. Nowadays, people do that. We see that someone becomes very expert at juggling high-sounding words about transcendence, and everyone thinks he's a great guru because he can, you know, create such amazing poetic prose describing the absolute truth. But that is not the qualification. It goes beyond expertise, verbal expertise. It goes far, far beyond it. One has to actually awaken the pure love of God in their heart. You see? One has to be a lover of God. One has to become perfect. You see? One has to become perfect. And that perfection is to be completely surrendered to Lord Shri Krishna. That is a qualification for the bona fide spiritual master. Fully surrendered to Lord Krishna. In that way, he has become perfect. Completely surrendered to Krishna. So such a person, he can guide us out of this chaotic condition we're in right now. Where we are bombarded with so many material desires. Gross and subtle. This desire, that desire. So many desires. Bewildering us, confounding us, distracting us from our actual duty and mission of human existence. So, to have a spiritual master is a very, very important thing. Vishwanath Chakravarti Kur is described in this verse quoted that you cannot become Krishna conscious without pleasing the spiritual master. That is the key. You have to please, you have to satisfy the spiritual master. That is the criterion for actually becoming Krishna conscious. It's a personal thing, not impersonal. You can simply master some concepts and master some meditation techniques and become perfect. No, that's not the way. You have to place yourself under the able guidance of the bona fide spiritual master. And you have to please him by your service mood and your inquiring spirit. And that is how you'll actually advance in Krishna consciousness, not otherwise. That's how you get out of this material existence, not otherwise. Krishna wants to see even more than how much you're devoted to him. He wants to see how much you're devoted to his devotee. That's what Krishna wants to see. How much you're devoted to my devotee. So by this process of humble submission to the servant of the servant of God, in this way we become perfect in Krishna consciousness. We become blessed with transcendental knowledge. Teisham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buriyogam tam yenamam upiyantite. To those who are constantly worshipping me with love, I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. So that love goes to Krishna through the medium of the spiritual master. By humble service to the spiritual master, Krishna is very, very pleased. He accepts that loving service and showers his causeless mercy upon us. Like unlimited torrents of rain in the monsoon season. So we have to become focused on what it means to be Krishna conscious. We have to understand, as we were mentioning earlier, what is the difference? What's the advantage of being Krishna conscious as opposed to not being Krishna conscious? What is the advantage of being on the pathway as opposed to not being on the pathway? The advantage of being on the pathway is you regain your original spiritual identity. Each and every one of us has an original identity in the spiritual world. We have forgotten it. We have gotten caught up in one material identity after another material identity after another material identity through 8,400,000 species of life. Jalaja Navalakshani Stavara Lakshavinshati. In this way, through 8,400,000 species of life, we become diverted. We have identified with so many false selves. I'm male, I'm female, I'm white, I'm black, I'm human being, I'm dog, I'm cat, I'm alligator, I'm snake, I am oak, I am pine, I am dandelion. We have identified with so many, I am ant. We have identified with so many different bodies through so many millions and millions of lifetimes. And now here we are stuck in another one. The difference is now we have a human body, and the human body gives a special facility. The human birth gives the facility that here is your chance to escape. Just imagine if you're in prison. You're always under careful guard. But one day you happen to be out in the yard near the fence, the wall, and you notice the guard fell asleep. Now's your chance to escape. So, it's a very rough analogy, but this human life is your chance to escape the cycle of birth and death. That's a fact. There's a special facility given in the human life that you've been caught up in the cycle of birth and death for millions of births. Now, as a human being, if you like to, you can get out. Not by cheating the system, as the example, but by actually following the system. The human birth allows you, if you take shelter of the process of self-realization, the human life allows you the facility to get out of the cycle of birth and death and regain your original identity in the spiritual world, which is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss, as opposed to the temporary, miserable, ignorant identities that we cling to lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. So you can have it or you can leave it. No one's going to force you. You can take it, you can leave it. If you want to remain in one temporary body after another temporary body, identifying with this flesh and blood compartment and that flesh and blood compartment lifetime after lifetime, you can do that. You're welcome to do that if you want. We encourage you not to, because it's not very good, really. It's a raw deal. It's a raw deal. The hype is big, but what you finally get in the end, it's pretty rough. Birth, death, old age, and disease. Miseries of the mind and body. Miseries caused by other living beings. Miseries caused by natural disasters like Texas tornadoes, tsunamis, etc. So why suffer? The devotee of the Lord, he's become liberated. He's not going to take birth again in this material world. He knows he's out of here. He's happy knowing this is my last lifetime here. I'm getting out of this place. I'm not coming back. I'm liberated by Krishna's mercy, Guru's mercy. I'm liberated. So as he's leaving, as he's exiting the prison with his freedom papers in his hand, he's encouraging everyone else, why don't you come too? Why do you want to stay here? Don't you realize how foolish it is to stay in this prison house? Come on. Chalo. They say in Hindi, let's go. Chalo. Let's get out of here. Why are you lingering here? Why are you're attached? But I have my this, my that. My this, my that. My Maya, that's... You're thinking it's yours? You're clinging to all these attachments. It's mine, it's mine. No, nothing is yours. Nir mama, nothing is yours in this world. Try to understand. Nothing. The only thing you have is the false conception that you are the owner. Nothing else is to renounce. Nothing to be renounced except the false conception that you are the owner. That's all. We simply have to acknowledge Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Saravaloka Maheshvaram Suhridam Sarvabhutanam Gyatvalam Santamrichati. Krishna says, I am that supreme enjoyer. Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Saravaloka Maheshvaram, and I am the owner of everything, proprietor of everything. Suhridam Sarvabhutanam, and I am the best friend of all living entities. And Gyatvamam Santamrichati. And only those who realize this achieve genuine peace. So, the devotee, he's getting out of this place. He's not coming back here. And he's encouraging everyone, why are you lingering here? Come on. It's a wonderful, wonderful life in the spiritual world. There's no birth. There's no death. There's no old age, there's no disease. Simply an eternal youthful life of celebration, jubilation, celebration. There's no taxes to pay, no freeways, traffic to worry about, no Al-Qaeda to worry about. Krishna is there and his devotees are there. They're eternally youthful. They don't get sick. The food is delicious. The flowers are fragrant. The water is pristine. The air is pristine. Everything is beautiful and wonderful beyond our wildest imagination. And they're just enjoying unlimited varieties of loving pastimes centered around Lord Krishna. It's so wonderful. It's so ecstatic. It's inconceivably sublime, that spiritual world. So, why not come? We're inviting you. Yes, you come. Why not come? Why stay here another lifetime in this material world? Come on, get out of here. This is the invitation. So, we can ask now if there's any questions. Yeah.
How can we make our determination strong enough to get past the bodily problems?
You have to realize that you have no alternative. It's like you're on the Titanic and someone says, well, you know, how can I get the determination to get in the lifeboat? You have to realize you're on a sinking ship. You have no choice. Otherwise, you're going down into the lower species. You have no choice. If you're on the Titanic, you're thinking, well, this boat won't really sink. You see, many people thought it was an unsinkable ship. They couldn't believe it could really sink. You see? So people think that way about the material world, you know. No, it's okay. Science, you know, by science we'll create immortality. This will be the kingdom of God, and we'll all be God here, you see, because of the scientists. I don't need religion. I don't need a spiritual life. Material life is where it's at. Yeah, we'll get it together. We've got computer chips. We've got, you know, internet connection and a mobile phone now. I can surf the internet right here on my hand. So surely we'll become immortal very soon. You have to realize there's no choice. It's either, you know, sink or swim. Your choice. You want to get out of here or do you want to remain here? You have to make that choice. What do you want? So, any other questions? Yeah.
You just now read that a devotee who is on the path, whatever actions he do, he is out of duality. Could you explain that at one again?
Yes. How is it the devotee is free from duality? In the material world that is described, seasonal changes. Matra sparsha shtukonteya shitoshna sukadhukada agamapayano nityashtang shashikshpashvabharata. The non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course of time are like the appearance and disappearance of the winter and summer season. One must learn to tolerate them, O Sayana Bharata, without being disturbed. It is also described in the Bhagavad Gita that the Vaishnava, the devotee, is not disturbed by happiness and distress. We can understand not being disturbed by distress, but not being disturbed by happiness. That's another thing. You see, we have to learn not to be disturbed by happiness, because all the happiness in this, that means not to become excited. Just like an example, when we flew to, we were trying to fly to Europe a couple of months back, we had a horrible thing on the airplane happen, and the plane had to go back. They thought the plane was going to blow up, and it was pretty bad. So they gave us free, they gave us coupons for free ticket. I looked today, actually it was a coupon, it said $500 voucher. But then I looked at the fine print and said, it's also good for a free ticket. And I called them and said, yeah, you can get a free round trip ticket to Europe with this coupon. So they said, well, they were saying your wife is going to really be excited about this. I said, no, she won't. She knows better than to be excited. And sure enough, there was some problem with the coupon and it didn't work. One coupon worked and the other one didn't work for some reason. So the whole thing was finished. We couldn't get the tickets. We're going to try tomorrow, of course, when the customer care department opens, to get the problem cleared. But instead of getting excited about, you know, wow, two free tickets to Europe, that's a pretty good perk. Instead of getting excited about it, no. We were just, I don't know, whatever Krishna arranges, that's all right. And Krishna arranged that we didn't get it. So you have to just see everything, whatever Krishna wants, that's all. If Krishna wants me to suffer, that's all right. If Krishna wants me to enjoy, that's all right. Whatever Krishna wants, that's how you become beyond the dualities. If you allow yourself to be excited when things are great and become depressed when things are bad, then you're caught up in the dualities. But if you simply say, well, ever Krishna gives me, that's all right. If he wants me to suffer, then I'm happy to suffer. Because it must be pleasing to him if he wants me to suffer. If he wants me to enjoy, then that's all right. It must be pleasing to him if he wants me to enjoy. Whatever he gives me, I will take in his service. Good or bad is not an issue anymore. It is simply, how can I please Krishna? That's all. Whatever he gives me, I just want to take it and offer it in his service. Use everything for his pleasure, his satisfaction, the good, the bad, the ugly, and the beautiful. All for the pleasure of Krishna. That's what it means to be beyond the dualities. If you do that, you'll always be in a state of transcendental bliss. You see, that's the key. Instead of going for sukha, go for susukha. Why go for a little flickering illusion, illusory pleasure when you can go for genuine spiritual bliss? You see, we immediately want to say a little happiness. Oh, wow, we got free tickets to Europe. That's great. We'll save so much money in our... Instead of getting all excited, no. Well, let's see what Krishna does here. Whatever he wants is fine. I'm just happy to be Krishna's devotee. Mare Krishna Rake Ke Rake Krishna Mare Ke. If Krishna wants to kill me right now, that's all right too. If he wants to kill me this very minute, that's okay. If he wants me to protect me from my killer, that is also okay. Whatever he wants. You see? That mood of complete detachment from suffering, enjoying and, suffering in this world. Simply happy to always be Krishna's devotee, Krishna's servant, in any and all conditions. That is the liberated platform. Pramabhutta prasanatma na sochati na kankshati. No hankering, no lamenting.
Yes? In the same lines, the question follows in the same lines. We see that a material person, when he's suffering from a disease, say for example cancer or something,
okay,
and the devotee is also suffering, yes, both are actually going through the same pain.
Yes.
So what is the difference between them then?
The difference is the devotee doesn't identify with the pain and the non-devotee does, because he thinks that he's his body. That's the difference.
But as far as the pain is concerned, this is...
For a devotee, it's just something out there in the material energy. It's not him. If I think that I have cancer, that's a pretty scary thing. If I think I'm going to die because I have cancer, that's a pretty scary thing. But I think, oh, there's just something out there, and there's some little thing happening out there in the external energy, not in me. It has nothing to do with me. It's a big difference. It's kind of like, here's a rough analogy. You're away from home and you're driving back to your neighborhood and you see there's a huge fire in the neighborhood. And all the fires are, some house in your neighborhood is on fire. In fact, there's like a 5-alarm fire. It's a big one. The house is being burned to the ground. And you're in total anxiety. No, my house is gone. Then you go back, it was your neighbor's house. Of course, you feel sorry for your neighbor, but for yourself, you go, whew, it wasn't my house. Right? I mean, we have to admit it, I mean, we certainly feel sorry for our neighbor. We invite him to come and stay with us, but, while they get their house, insurance money and all that, but we're so relieved. Thank God it wasn't my house, right? So, for a devotee, you have cancer. I'm glad it wasn't me. Just a damn body, temporary body. It's like I have a rip in my chatter, at least it wasn't me. I didn't get cut, it's my chatter got a rip in it. I can always get a new chatter in Loy Bazaar, no problem. You see. So, I'm glad it wasn't me that had cancer. God, it was just that rotting corpse that was going to die anyway, Whew. For a minute I thought I was in trouble, but then I realized it was just the body, it wasn't me. Next question. Yes. What is he asking?
What is Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadhi?
Janma, Mrityu, Jara, Vyadhi. Yes. Janma means birth. Mrityu means death. Jara means old age. And Vyadhi means when you get sick. Birth, death, old age, and disease. Janma, Mrityu, Jara, Vyadhi. Yes. Next question. So, yes, question.
In the purport you say that the devotee is on the path, he has to 3 times remember the guru and pray for him.
Yes, that we pray every morning in our Gurvastakam prayers, and we encourage all of our members to begin reciting these prayers at home. First of all, become fixed in chanting 16 rounds, and then you can offer an arti to Prabhupada. And this is Prabhupada's instruction. We have this Mangala Arti. Early morning, actually 4:30 is the standard time in our temples. But then you can sing these 8 prayers. And this is the 8th of the prayers. Yasha prasadad bhagavat prasado Yasha prasadam nagati kutopi Jayanstu vangstasya yasastri sanjam Vande guru shi chada naradindam. It's such a beautiful prayer. The it's enjoined by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and confirmed by Srila Prabhupada that 3 times a day you should offer your respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of your spiritual master. And the Sanskrit is Trisanja, which is morning, noon, sunrise, high noon, and sunset. As close as possible to those times, the disciple should offer their respectful obeisances to their spiritual master at least 3 times a day. The Trisanjas.
And those who are working people, all those?
Then you can do it mentally. You can. Is it illegal to put your hands like this at work? No. You don't. Of course, the Muslims, they don't care. They'll get down on the floor and do their Mecca thing. But we can do like this. We can just, morning, noon, and evening, 3 times a day, we can. Of course, when you're at home or at the temple, you should bow down on the floor. But if you're at the office, then you can do like this. And those who are second initiated, at that time, they also chant their Gayatri Mantra. So, it's very easy. You chant Gayatri Mantra, and then you say your obeisances to your spiritual master. At those 3 times. Any other questions? Yes?
People, devotees who are initiated one time only cannot chant Gayatri Mantra.
Yes, because that is given at second initiation. Yes.
Why is that?
Because you have to qualify yourself to chant Gayatri Mantra. It's not a whimsical thing. You have to be situated as a Brahmin, Brahminical qualities, to actually properly chant Gayatri. You have to be situated. Shama damastapa shaucham shantirarjavame vicha jnanam vijnanam astakyam brahma karmas pavavacham. You have to be situated in the minical qualities. You see? So therefore, your first initiation is the opportunity. Now you qualify yourself with minical qualities. To simply chant Gayatri without having minical qualities is hypocritical. One should qualify themselves as a Brahmin by developing the brahminical qualities, and then their Gayatri Mantra will be very potent. Otherwise, there's not much, there's no potency to speak of. There's not much effect. So, by chanting Hare Krishna Mantra, you can qualify yourself as a Brahmin, and then you get the extra potency of chanting Gayatri Mantra 3 times daily. The standard Gayatri Mantra that Hindus are familiar with is only one of many Gayatri Mantras, actually. So, in our society, we give many, a whole string of very nice mantras, beginning with that standard Om Bhurbhava. But then there are many other mantras also along with that, chanted 3 times a day. So, if one would like to advance in Krishna consciousness, then they should qualify themselves as a Brahmana and so they can receive their second initiation as Brahman and chant these wonderful Gayatri Mantras 3 times a day. Any other questions? Yes.
You mentioned that this book is the most sublime book, which is Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah.
But every book claims that.
Yes. No, no. Not every book. Not every book. He claims that. Most books do not claim that.
I'm talking about material books also. They say that you...
How many material books even say this is the most sublime, this is the topmost knowledge? How many books, of your mundane books you ever read that said that? Have you read even one mundane book that said that? Made that claim about itself? I've never seen. Well, there was one. that may have claimed, said it was called the book. But I don't even. But even that book, I don't remember him saying, the author saying like that. They don't even make that claim. And if they do, then you have to. If they do, if some mundane book makes a claim that this is the most sublime knowledge in all the universe, then you have to compare it with the Bhagavad Gita and see which is in fact more sublime. This Bhagavad Gita is recognized throughout the world. Even if the Hare Krishna movement did not exist, the Bhagavad Gita is the most famous book read by scholars for thousands of years all over the world. Thoreau read it. He said, "In the morning I bathe my intellect in the stupendous and cosmogonal philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita, in comparison which the mundane world and its literature seem to be puny and trivial." This is simply, this was in the earlier days of America, Henry David Thoreau, the famous philosopher. That's what he said. You see? So this book has been, this Bhagavad Gita is recognized, even beyond what we have to say about it, it's been recognized for thousands of years all over the world as the most sublime book of knowledge. Any other questions? Yes.
So when Krishna descended as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is it that the flute descended as the mridanga?
Did the flute descend as the mridanga? That I cannot say. Which flute are you talking about? There's not just one flute. You said the flute. Well, there is no such thing as the flute. There's many different flutes. Krishna has a whole collection of flutes.
His question is that Krishna has the flute.
Did you say Krishna, what was the question? I thought you said, did the flute descend? How did the flute descend?
As a mridanga for Lord Chaitanya.
Yeah, that's, you asked that question. And I said, I don't know.
Lord Chaitanya plays mridanga and Krishna plays flute.
That I cannot say.
That's what the Indian.
It's certainly possible. Have you read somewhere that Lord Chaitanya plays mridanga?
No, I just heard someone asking this question somewhere.
Yeah, I don't recall ever seeing a painting of him playing mridanga. I don't recall it. Any other questions?
Yes. Again, a devotee is on the path of being a Krishna consciousness. Even though he is not yet initiated, but he is on his path, for him when he chants Gayatri Mantra, would there be any potency for him?
Not so much, because Prabhupada's system is second initiation. It's better not to do. It's better to follow the prescribed system given by Srila Prabhupada than to try to jump ahead artificially. It's not good. It's better not to do. In fact, my instruction is, someone asks me, should I not? Don't. If you ask. If someone were to ask me, should I or should I not before initiation, or even before second initiation, my instruction is, don't. Because this is the acharya's system. We follow the pathway of the acharya's. That's how we become properly situated. In fact, when we got I remember when I got my Gayatri Mantra from Prabhupada, there was a sheet. The sheet I was given said, confidential, only for second initiated devotees who receive this from His Divine Grace. Very confidential. And you won't find anywhere in the books that the whole string of mantras given, second initiation is given. It's not little, some, there's a little piece here, a little piece there, you don't really know until you get second initiated what the Brahmins are chanting. That is not given That's not available to anyone until they're second initiated. The whole string of mantras that are given to our second initiated disciples. That is confidential.
How many times disciples should get initiated in order to reach...
How many
times the initiation is possible for the disciple to reach...
I'm hard of hearing, so how many times...
How many times a disciple has to get initiated?
Oh, there's actually... To go back to Godhead, first initiation is sufficient. If someone receives first initiation, they fully surrender to the spiritual master, they leave their body and they're properly situated. The Gayatri Mantra is very, very potent, but the first initiation is required for spiritual perfection. The Hare Krishna mantra is sufficient in itself to completely liberate the disciple from the cycle of birth and death. But for the sake of the Vedic society, someone becomes recognized as a Brahmin for the sake of acting as a teacher and for doing the puja. In the temple, only the Brahmins. Second initiates can go on the altar. And the cooking is only, those who touch fire, only second initiates. That is keeping the Vedic culture very nicely structured. So that second initiation is given to give actual status that here is a duly authorized Brahmana. Actually, Vaishnava is even higher position than Brahmana. When one becomes first initiated, they are Vaishnava. They are actually beyond Brahman already. But for the sake of social, you could say Hindu culture, Hindu society, Vedic culture, Vedic society, we give that Brahminical recognition. That here is a person who is very fixed in their Krishna consciousness, so now we can recognize that here is a Brahman. When I went for my second initiation, Prabhupada had one question and one question only. You were chanting 16 rounds regularly? Yes, ma'am. So first initiation is an opportunity to qualify oneself as a fixed Vaishnava. And one can show that, yes, I have gotten my first initiation and now I am fixed in my vows, then one can be given second. It's a further confirmation that this person has taken the path. They've taken it very well and they're solidly situated, so now we will give them extra recognition. First initiation, we can be very liberal, very lenient, but second initiation is more strict. Someone has to show that they're really steady in their sadhana, in their Krishna consciousness, to get second initiation. And then for the male-bodied devotees, there's also third initiation. That is not required, but that is also for the sake of preaching, one may accept sannyas order, the male devotees. That is not required. But for liberation, first initiation, that is sufficient. If one can become first initiated and take one's vows very seriously, then that is sufficient for liberation. Any other questions? Yes?
Just now you said a devotee who has got Brahminical qualities and a Brahmin who is born in a Brahmin family. What's the difference
between those two? Being born in a Brahmin family means you have the opportunity to be a Brahmin. Let's say you were born in the family of your father is a high court judge. You see? Then that is a very good opportunity for you to also become a judge or a lawyer, something like that. Because your father is always talking about legal cases. Because his association is there, you have a very good opportunity. But sometimes we see that the children don't follow the way of the parents. The father may have been a successful businessman, but the son becomes a bum. It happens. So it is not automatic. This was a misconception introduced many centuries ago by the Brahmins in India, That if you're born in the family of a Brahman, you're automatically a Brahman. That's not true. That's completely nonsense. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, guna karma vivarakashaha. It is according to qualities and work, not according to janma, birth. So, just like in America, you don't become, because your father is an engineer, by birth you don't automatically become an engineer. You have to go to engineering college and qualify yourself also, on your own. You can't say, my father is an engineer, so you have to accept me as an engineer. No. So one cannot claim to be a Brahmin because their father is a Brahmin or because their ancestor was a Brahmin. One cannot claim. And that is the biggest problem, one of the biggest problems in India, is people are claiming brahminical status by dint of birth. Cannot claim. And one is a Brahmin by developing the qualities of a Brahmin. Shamodamastapashocham shantir arjavam evacha jnanam vijnanam astikyam brahma karma sravabhajam. Controlling the mind, controlling the senses, being peaceful, being austere, being clean, full faith in the scripture, practical realization of the scripture in this way. Honesty, qualities of a Brahman must be there. And then one can be recognized as a Brahman. Questions more? Yes?
Arjuna was negative about this Bhagavad Gita because the science was lost.
Arjuna, science?
Arjuna was told about the Gita because the science of relationship with God was lost. So
yes, the science was lost, that's right.
So did he start any parampara?
Hmm?
Did he start any parampara?
No.
So who started?
Not that... Well... Was there a disciplic succession from Arjuna? Not that, let me put it this way, not that I know of. So how did? So what's the? So that's the answer. Not that I know of. Any other question?
It's just that the whole thing is not lost.
Huh?
The whole thing is just a waste of time.
Ah.
You should have started
somewhere. So actually, that knowledge was clearly passed on. There were saintly kings after Arjuna also. And Maharaj Parikshit was there. He was in the Kshatriya line from the Pandavas, Maharaj Parikshit. So that there was some transmission of the saintly king dynasty. That proper understanding of Bhagavad Gita was indeed passed to Parikshit Maharaj. So we cannot say it was a waste of time. That, of course, Sringi got in the way. That little Brahmin, that so-called Brahmin boy, Sringi, he cursed Maharaj Parikshit. And there was, so the Kali Yuga came and things again became disruptive. That's a fact. However, there are different lines of succession. Sometimes they're running parallel with each other. The fact is there's a line from Brahmaji which is unbroken since the beginning of the universe. This particular line through the Kshatriyas, that line had been broken. But there's another line and that is coming from Brahmaji. Brahmaji, Narad, Vyas. Because Vyas is living a very long time. In fact, Vyas is still living in the Himalayas. So that line is unbroken. And of course, many centuries ago, Madhvacharya, he went to Himalayas, he met with Vyas. So through Madhvacharya, that line has come down to Ishvarapuri, Madhavendrapuri, Ishvarapuri, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, six Goswamis in this way, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, Srila Prabhupada eventually. Now we are carrying on with that. Prabhupada said, I am the 11th Lord Chaitanya. My Guru Maharaj was 10th, I am 11th, and you are 12th. So in this way, we are carrying on that unbroken line coming from Krishna through Lord Brahma, Brahma Sampradaya. That line is not broken. It was interesting to hear that Prabhupada, I heard just yesterday, he's explaining up to 4,000 years ago, this whole planet was known as Bharatvarsh. So that means the influence of Vedic culture, the Kshatriya king's influence, continued for 1,000 years into Kali Yuga. So there was some effect from Krishna speaking to Arjuna. Wasn't it just it was all lost when Arjuna went back to Godhead? Actually, not back to Godhead. It's explained that Arjuna remains in this material world. This is Krishna's companion here. We recently read that. That's a whole other matter, but that is his relationship with Krishna, to be a friend here in this material world with Krishna. Again and again and again and again and again. So yes, it was not fruitless, this speaking of Bhagavad Gita. And it has been picked up by the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya and being utilized. Prabhupada has taken, and now he's utilizing the full potency of Bhagavad Gita for the deliverance of the fallen conditioned soul. So it was not fruitless. Just see how many people had made devotees by reading Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. Not fruitless. Yes?
What was the name of Swami Prabhupada's guru?
The
guru of Swami Prabhupada.
What was his name?
Yeah.
Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Goswami. His picture is good. You can see in Bhagavad Gita. In the altar we have his picture. Yeah, you'll see his picture in so many places. I don't see here, but yeah, he's on the altar. We always have Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakura. He was a great acharya, Nityasiddha devotee, who was Bhaktivinoda Thakura, was trying to push forward this Krishna consciousness movement. And he was finding that he needed some help. So he prayed to Krishna, "You kindly send one of your personal associates, someone from your personal stock," he said, "to carry on this mission." So on the prayers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur appeared in this world. It was very auspicious. When he appeared, his umbilical cord was wrapped around his shoulder like a Brahmin thread. And at that time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was the magistrate in Puri, Jagannath Puri. And there'd be a special darshan. The Rath Yatra cart would come to his house so he could have special private darshan. So the boy had just been born. Bimal, at that time, he was known as Bimal Prasad. So Bimal Prasad, the baby, was taken by the mother up on the Rath Yatra cart in front of Jagannath. And as soon as the baby was placed before Jagannath, immediately Jagannath's garland fell onto the child. So he was very special. From the very birth, he was a liberated soul. And he spread this movement all over India. He established 64 temples within India. Gaudiya Math, 64 temples. He tried to get his disciples, others than Prabhupada. Prabhupada was a householder at the time, raising family, raising children, doing business, not actively preaching. He had his active preachers, sannyasis. He sent some of them to England to try to spread this movement to the Western world. They were a complete failure. They couldn't do it. There was only one disciple who was able to carry out the instructions of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur successfully, and that was His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So he's the only one who really had who was able to carry forward with that shakti of his guru and of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So we're very fortunate that we've gotten that shelter in Prabhupada's lotus feet and his movement. He's the greatest acharya in history, actually. He ordered us, his disciples, he said that I have done double of my Guru Maharaj, now you must do double than me. He ordered us, we have done, so that's a big order. He told us, his disciples, now you must double what I have done. I have done twice, but my Guru, now you must do four times. I have doubled my Guru, now you must also double, make four times. Any other question?
Would you say something about your forthcoming trip?
Yes, we are going to the Middle East. Not to Baghdad, not on this trip. I don't have a bulletproof vest, it's powerful enough. But now we're going to Doha and to Bahrain. And then we are going to Sri Vrindavan Dham. And then we are going to Mumbai for preaching. And then we are going to Brisbane, Australia for some preaching. And then we're going to New Govardhan, a beautiful rural community in the mountains near Murwalamba, Australia. We're going there for some days. And then we're going to Sydney where they have a whole schedule for us preaching. Very big, big preaching schedule in Sydney. And then we're going to Melbourne for several days of preaching. And then we're going to Fiji, where they also have a tour lined up. We're doing preaching all throughout the Fiji Islands, going from island to island for 3 weeks, preaching throughout the Fiji Islands. And then we are coming back to LA for 1 day, and then coming back to Austin for a week. And then we have a program in Florida. A whole schedule in Florida. And after that, we're open until March. We return to Europe. We have openings. We're taking bids. Anyone in the world, anyone wants to come and preach, is willing to facilitate us. We're open now. In the month of February, after we get back from Florida, there's like maybe 2 weeks, because we have to get ready for Gaur Purnima on March 3rd. But there's at least a week and a half in there where we could go anywhere and preach. Have Krishna will travel.
So in your emails, keep on sending us all the information and the photographs and everything.
Yeah, the emails are there. Yeah. That's right. Thought for the day will keep you updated. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, it's a glorious life. Actually, it is the duty. Prabhupada explains, it's coming out in tomorrow's Thought for the Day, a little sneak preview here, but it's actually the duty to travel and preach. It's the duty, Prabhupada explained. Those who are in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this is their duty to travel and preach. So we're just doing our service. That's all. It's our responsibility to make the world Krishna conscious. Whatever we can do, do our share to make the world Krishna conscious. Any other question? Yeah.
In traveling, do you have any problem with customs with Sri Radha Damodara?
Do we have any trouble taking care of them?
No, passing through the customs.
Oh, passing through customs. So far, so good. So far, we haven't had any trouble.
You have to reveal them?
We've been bringing them.
No, reveal them.
Oh, no, we haven't even had to reveal them, I don't think. It's possible we may have had to reveal them, but I don't recall it. Mataji wouldn't remember. I don't remember any time we had to show the deities. We were advised that we went into Russia, that we might have trouble bringing them out. So when we went to Russia, we left them in Lithuania for several days at the temple. They were served at the temple. We didn't carry them into Russia. It's actually very auspicious traveling with them. They give all blessings. And that way we're able to distribute their Mahaprasad. Every time I give lecture, we distribute the Mahaprasad of Radha Damodara. And everyone's very enlivened to get that Mahaprasad of Shri Radha Damodara. So it's very auspicious. They are, in fact, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, who gave those deities to Mataji, he said, we were not traveling with them. He told us, you can travel with them. He was encouraging us, actually, to travel with them. We were always hesitant, but finally we realized that it's just, we can't bear to be away from them so long. They're so wonderful deities, so special, so sweet, so sublime, so full of mercy. Who would want to not have their association? So we decided we must take that in, take these deities with us. It's extra work, of course, on the road, but it's very enlivening work. It's a labor of love. Wherever we go, we have to figure out how we're going to serve them in this location. You see? Sometimes they go on the altar, sometimes we keep them in our room, depending on the situation. In Bulgaria, they stay in our room, and everyone comes, after class, everyone comes to our room for darshan. In other temples, they're on the altar. It just depends on the situation.
They don't have an altar.
Hmm?
They do not have an altar in Bulgaria.
Well, the different pujaris have different moods. Some pujaris welcome them and some don't. On the altar. Depends on the pujari. Everyone's a person.
Yeah.
Someone thinks, well, my altar is already filled up. I don't want any other deities and I have to move everything around. Rather not have these deities on the altar. Sometimes the pujaris are like that. You know, it just depends. We just have to deal with the situation that comes. Okay? Jai. Raja Vidya Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.